So hello, and we're back with the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. It's very much the home of football, and this week it's very much the podcast with subtitles. We're here at District 10 Bistro and Bar here in Singapore. Please come down and give the guys a try. So I'm your host, Steve McBain. I'm joined by pod regulars, Mr. Tom Warren. Tom, how are you?
Excellent, Steve. Thank you very much.
Mr. Drew O'Donnell, how are you?
Very well. Glad to be back.
Mr. Andy Dyer, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
And we have a pod newbie, Mr. Brian O'Donnell. Brian, how are you?
Fine.
Now, Brian, as is traditional with newcomers, we always ask, who do you support?
Celtic.
For how long and why?
Celtic. Almost all my life. Why? Well, in Glasgow, by the Rangers or Celtic when I was growing up, so it's been Celtic.
And greatest ever Celtic player for you?
Billy McNeil,
okay.
Caesar.
Not a controversial choice. There you go. All right, well, moving on and going through part one of the week's news. Tom, Gary Neville has said a parting of the ways with Valencia. I mean, was there ever really a point to this, and what is it that I'm missing here?
I think that's a question everyone's asking ourselves. I mean, from someone that was doing so well in media to then go and take the risk of management, and to pick a club like Valencia, where, as we've spoken about here before, he's had to learn another language. They actually brought people in to help him with his coaching that were very bilingual. I mean, I don't see how he can go back to media, because now he can't. He's failed, so he can't really go.
Drew,
back
you were
to
saying
media.
Sky. He's got a
Sky. Was a little bit.
That's a bit extreme. He's failed. Yes. 3 months in the job, he's failed, he's rubbish. No, I think that's a bit extreme.
True, you don't think it's hurt his reputation?
No, I think in the same thing as he took the wrong job, because part of being a manager is to communicate to your players. If you can't communicate, get your feelings over, your attitude to the game over, it's going to be very difficult. If you take a step back in coaching's just about pass the ball here, be in this position, be in that position, shoot. So if you wanted to be a coach, fantastic. You want to be a manager, it's all about communication.
Andy, do you expect him to, I mean, do you think he'll go back into the media, or do you think he's got his appetite whetted now? And
I think he'll want to prove himself, and I think we'll see him again pop up, probably in the, maybe not the Premiership, but somewhere in England. I think he'll go back, and I don't think he's the sort of man who will just take that failure of take defeat and just leave it at that.
Okay, well, one big English club that is not going to be in the Premiership and be looking for a manager is Aston Villa. Brian, you mentioned off air that David Moyes has been heavily linked with Celtic. Do you think he would consider stepping down a division going with Villa? Or Celtic, yes, but.
Well, Steve, when he came from, but he was with Everton, middle of the league, you know, it was safe with them. They were never going to go down anyway. He popped at Man U, possibly the wrong time, the wrong job for him. There's a lot of hearsay going back to Glasgow.
You would argue, though, that the goldfish bowl in Glasgow is even more intense than at Manchester United. Yeah. I mean, the job, I wouldn't say is a bigger one, but the expectation is much more unrealistic almost.
Well, there's only 4 miles between the stadiums there. The big one in Man U was always Liverpool. At least you got the M62, you split them.
But, Drew, just getting back towards Villa a second. I mean, would Moyes go down to the Championship, or do they need...
To be honest, too much,
Tom, you're shaking your head.
If Moyes only had one club that he's actually promoted from Division 2 in Preston, Preston North End, let's give it its full title in case there's a Preston out there. But if you need a proven manager to bring you up, I mean, Steve Bruce is the most successful, shall we say, promotion manager out there, and he's the obvious choice. That's why I think Villa are going to wait until the end of the season to see where
the only problem with this, Tom, that I would see is that, you know, you mentioned Steve Bruce, and I completely accept. There's also mentioned, Mick McCarthy, for instance. These are guys. Brian Robson was another.
Yeah.
Very, very good in the Championship. Now, and obviously, that's Villa's immediate concern. But then you almost have to get rid of that guy to move on. Do you have some other suggestions, Tom?
Well, yeah. My reasoning behind Moyes is I know that Fulham tried to get Moyes, and we failed, and we have the money in terms of Championship clubs, even though we are struggling. We have the money. I think I agree with Drew. Steve Bruce is the ultimate choice. I think Pearson would be a great shout for them as well.
You think Pearson would have learned from the mistakes he made at Leicester? Or?
Well, that notice sign the sun? Yeah, definitely.
I also think as well, though, on the lines of the Championship, trying to get up from the Championship is a big thing. You think about the money that's about to kick into the Premier League. A lot of people are going to be really worried and panic buying and panic spending. I think Villa's problems, though, are more... A bit like Newcastle, the problems at the club run deeper than just a squad of players. The problems relate all the way up to the board.
The other thing, they need to go down to go back out.
The other problem I would have if I was a manager looking to take the Villa job is that Randy Lerner is still trying to sell the club. So there's a reasonable chance this summer that you could take that job and then find out there's a new owner, and we all know what happens then, right?
The problem that you've got to look at, you look at so many clubs that have gone down over the last few years, Bolton, Blackburn, they are now four or five seasons out, and you look at the debt they've gone into. And I'm not saying that's going to happen to Villa because they have a larger...
Dude, Bolton, it's the Celtic Association that seems to drag everybody down.
Anyway, so I mean, if you think about it, it's a big risk, because if you don't make it up in the first season, it's a very hard Championship to get out of. Yeah. You're lost.
Speaking of the bottom end...
Sorry, Steve, I'd just like to come in on that. But a wee thing in the back of my head, I think the supporters have got a lot to say about who they want to bring into clubs in the future, managers, coaches, whatever, because at the end of the day, they're the people that have been through the
clubs. So much more, you know, moving towards like the German model. I couldn't agree with you more. Okay, well, we'll see who Villa goes for this summer in due course. Now, in the interest of being balanced on here, we don't want any bias, so we're just going to touch on the England national team for a second. So we do have one Englishman in the room, so we're not going to ask him. Andy, Roy Hodgson's been making some comments about John Terry, which seem entirely pointless to me. While you would upset the other sort of centre-halves, unless there is some kind of... you know, half an idea that he might come back. He hasn't played for England for 4 years. Could he really come back?
No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think he's had his time. I don't see him. I think he's done very well, but I think he's got to realise that he's getting on a bit, and I think it's the way he plays now is changing, and he's got to evolve, and maybe he can't do a whole 90 minutes.
I think it's his speed.
It's his speed is the first thing you're losing. These guys are getting faster and faster, and I don't think he's the player that he was.
Okay, but Tom, I mean, if that's the case, then what was the point in Roy Hodgson even bringing it up?
Well, yeah, Hodgson's the one that has created this whole story. He's the one that has said that there is a problem. And we do, England do have a problem defensively, especially on that left-sided centre-back. I personally, as a quite a big fan of John Terry, I think he'd be brilliant to bring in to play with John Stones and to mentor John Stones. John Stones, I know that Terry has...
Well, there's an easy solution to that. He can just sign for Chelsea.
I know Terry doesn't have the pace, and maybe that wouldn't suit the game that England play, because England, you know, when we win the Euros with our attacking talent that we have...
Scotland's got as much chance of winning the Euros.
I don't think he would suit the way that maybe that England are now playing their football, but I genuinely think it's something that he should be brought in some capacity to help out the centre-halves that we have.
Okay, alright. Now Drew, I mean, you're very much the Nicholas Bentner of this podcast.
Yes, I am.
Wolfsburg are reportedly looking to terminate his contract 18 months early. What's gone wrong with this guy? I mean, is this just too much money and...
Oh, definitely. Wrong attitude. I mean, if you look at...
His father's his agent, right?
Yeah, if you look at players like Neville, you know, he learned from a very young age, you know, to give up alcohol, keep socialising down to a minimum, focus on being a professional. And that's the ultimate professional. Played at a very high level with what you could say is slightly above average talent, but he knew his weaknesses and he worked on them daily. You look at Bentner, when he came on...
He is actually slower than John Terry as well.
Yes, and I mean, the thing is, he's just a... When he came on at Arsenal, he actually looked like he could be a very good striker for them. And he just sort of decided to go on the socialising, buy Mercedes and taking social media snaps.
Okay, Brian, here's one for you. I predict in August we'll have John Terry lining up for Rangers and Nicholas Bentner lining up for Celtic.
and
I know who my money's on.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, I mean, you know, he's been playing for Denmark. I mean, we talked about John Terry. I mean, Andy, where do you stand on the international friendlies? I mean, does anybody really care? I mean, you look at the English press. I mean, they're always the same, but, you know, they beat Germany after they made a few substitutions. They're going to win the Euros. Then they get beat by Holland. I mean, is there really any point to it?
I think most fans agree that there is no point to it.
Can I just
until they win or lose?
Scotland won two games.
Exactly.
There's plenty of points.
But that's the thing. But again, it's pointless because we never do it when it matters. I mean,
yeah, true.
I don't know what anybody would pay to go to an international friend. It's, you know, I look at rugby and the tests that they play, which, you know, are not in a competition or something, and I would just love for international friendlies to take that kind of guys. But it just isn't. I mean, everybody knows it's a half-paced.
But I mean, if you look at it, when would a Scotland team bring in? I think to an extent, teams actually go too far. Like, I do believe Gordon Strachan playing two 18-year-olds that are only just coming
in.
I
thought there was six new caps or something.
There was three 18-year-olds.
I mean, you used to have to earn those caps, you know.
And that to me is wrong. When you haven't even proven yourself at club level, you're getting an international cap. It's like, what's the point?
Well, but at the same time, I mean, England took Theo Walcott to the World Cup.
Yes.
You know, when
that's a prime example where you haven't bled in the players that you're going to. I personally think friendlies are good, but maybe what they need to do is have these be internationals, whatever you want to call them.
But then the players don't want, I mean, you know, I'm trying to remember who it was. There was one of the England forwards, Chris Sutton. I mean, that was what basically ended his England career, because he refused to play in a B international. He just said, I don't want to play.
But I mean, if you look at it, how many players today, they get selected for the squad, or even going back a few more years, and then all of a sudden they pull out, oh, I've got an injury, or blah, 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 and then 2 days later, 2 weeks later, he's playing in his club game again.
The other thing as well is that what I would have thought would make more sense, right, is that we're coming to the, you know, the you know, the end of the seasons in Europe. We've got exciting, you know, maybe not so much in La Liga, but, you know, in England you've got one of the most exciting, you know, ends to a championship in years. Would it not make more sense to have pushed this back, ended the seasons a week, 10 days earlier, had a full domestic calendar, and if you played those friendlies in a concentrated fashion 3 weeks ahead of the tournament, then the players are going to turn up because they want to get picked.
Yes.
You know, for the game, rather than breaking up the momentum. I mean, you know, I didn't want to see England play Holland. I mean, I want to see what Leicester's going to do, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah, so.
Now, I mean, speaking of the major tournaments, I mean, Andy, there's been more sort of, you know, disturbing reports in the, not surprising though, in the press this week about, you know, regarding Qatar and workers' rights, or basically the entire lack of them. There's a new amnesty report. I mean, does anybody really care about this? And does FIFA have a duty to care about this, or do we just, you know?
I do think FIFA does have to take some responsibility, but I do think that people just don't seem to care that much. I know that's a bit harsh to say, but when we talk about the World Cup in Qatar, people's more concern is it's going to be played during the summer, it's going to be hot. They don't really look at the forced labour and the...
Well, that's the thing, the players can't run around for 90 minutes, but these guys are out there...
But especially during Ramadan, it's...
I don't think it's about people don't care about it, because people obviously care about people dying, etc. I just think people don't care about FIFA. It's a corrupt sort of organisation, and you just go, you know what, it's just another stick of the let's get this
Brian,
much money.
Brian, I was just going to ask you, so you're a slightly finer vintage, should we say. I mean, if you go back to, like, say, the 1978 World Cup Argentina, there was a lot of problems at the time regarding the regime in Argentina, you know. Was that something, do you recall, I mean, in Scotland at the time, was that something that was widely reported, or did people just turn a blind eye to it?
They did turn a blind eye to TV, yeah. Because politics, again, should never come into football. I've always said that, right? Especially internationally, whatever you go ahead with. But see, this Qatar, I mean, FIFA have got enough on their plate, enough stabbing each other on the back. What people are indicating that FIFA should be get rid of, come up with something else. But what we're going to do now at the moment, we can't come up with another FIFA, we've got to come up with something. They've been in these positions long enough now. but getting back to 1978, it was more or less Argentina World Cup, and politics didn't enter it, but it was shelled over because Argentina...
Nobody wanted to rock the boat, I guess.
They didn't want to rock it, Stevie, exactly, and they went on, and they went, it'd be, probably been a different scenario if they'd have lost. They won it, they were at home, they'd all the best group, i.e. like England in 1966, it's all the games that happened.
Well, another very controversial regime. Okay, well, we'll be talking about the team that that Argentina beat in that 78 final in part two, but that'll bring us to the end of part one, and as I say, we'll be back with part two. Okay, so we're back with part two of the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. I'm your host, Steve McBain. You can catch us on Audio Boom, on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, and you can get all the latest Premiership news and views at www.oneshotfootball.com. Now, in part two, as is always the case, we have a roundtable discussion. Now, sadly, in the news over the last week or so was the passing of Johan Cruyff, and I think it's safe to say that he was a football revolutionary, off the pitch as well in Catalonia. His effects have sort of rippled through the game, you know, in the way that he played, how that great Dutch team of 74 and 78 without him played their football, and then obviously in the way that Barcelona have taken things forward in their academy. So what we're really looking at is for a person or a team that has revolutionised football. You could argue the modern Cristiano Ronaldo, the way that he's changed the definition of a forward or wing play, how he bullies a player. You could talk about the last great Barcelona team under Guardiola with the tiki taka. So I mean, Drew, let's kick off with you. Who for you has done more to revolutionise football than anyone?
Well, I mean, you think about Cruyff and the tiki taka. I mean, what's the word I'm looking for here? They do sort of praise him with having the background into actually developing the tiki-taka with Barcelona.
I think it was the fact that you covet the ball.
Yes.
You know, you give it up at
the total football that they brought in. I mean, the Dutch team for me back in 74, where they used to always say that any player could play in any position at any one time with either foot, not just sort of one foot. That to me was the thing when I grew up that revolutionised football, where you weren't just saying, okay, I'm a big lump of a lad, so I'm either going to be centre half or I'm centre forward.
And was that Dutch
no,
team?
No disrespect to the couple of big lads that we've got in here.
That Dutch team as well was also, I think, one of the first teams to really start pressing.
Yeah, I mean, their football base was just basically about when you have the ball, you moved as a team. It wasn't just about punting it out to the fast guys on the wing, which probably Scotland were sort of at the time. You know, we had fast wingers, so give it to them. They would run up down the line, cross it in for the big lump of the lad to go for the ball. They seemed to just have sort of very good footballers all over the park, and I used to admire that.
Well, I was actually going to argue for Archie Gemmell as being revolutionary in that he invented the goal of the season.
Oh, undoubtedly. Goal of the World Cup. Goal
anyway,
of the century.
Tom's nodding off to sleep. So Drew...
Yeah, the Holland team, not necessarily your Cruyff, but that Holland team in the 70s for me was what revolutionised football, and sort of knock-on effect gave Barcelona the tiki-taki later
okay.
on.
Okay, all right. Tom?
Yeah, I'd agree with Cruyff. I mean, you know, the man has a football skill, a turn named after him, you know, and it was his most famous quote, football is played with your head, you know, rather than
well, that was Duncan Ferguson.
I think there's so many people that have revolutionised football in these days and age, and now with the advances in science and athletes and the way that these footballers today look after themselves and their bodies, you know, Ronaldo for example was definitely, Cristiano has taken it that step forward with the way you can see how he's changed from a young individual at Manchester United to the, you know, the pure athlete that he is at Real Madrid. There's so many people though that you can cast now, how Pele's changed the game as well, and also as well some of the things that some of the individuals I think as well have done off the field, you know, for the globe, for the game and also for society as well, and Pele and the way he's stood up and spoke out many things I think is a great thing. But for me, yeah, Cruyff, just purely because of the turn, I think it's the first skill that most children learn when you start playing.
Yeah.
Definitely the first turn I tried.
Before we go to the other two guys, I was just going to throw in sort of my my tuppence worth, and I was actually going to go for Franz Beckenbauer. The reason being is that there've been just been so many great attacking players, and it's so easy to eulogise about these guys, but what Beckenbauer did has really been. Basically, hardly anyone's been able to replicate it. If you look at it over the years, I would say Franco Baresi wasn't far off him. He was absolutely Rolls Royce. I would say Danny Blint was pretty good, and the other guy is Matthias Sammer, who was the fulcrum of the Germany team at 96. There have been other great ball playing defenders.
Well, they used Bobby Moura also. They reckoned.
Yeah.
I'm only throwing that in for Tom.
Cannavaro.
I don't mean it.
No, I mean, but the point I'm trying to make is that Beckenbauer was. That's the thing. It's not just being good on the ball. It's actually about being an attacker, a defender that was as good as an attacker as he was. Ronald Koeman is another one. But at the same time, Koeman probably wasn't a great defender. Andy, so you're chomping at the bit.
No.
Eager to get in.
You took me. You've taken my thunder with Beckenbauer, then I thought Koeman as well.
I think you'd be used to it by now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I think the way what I was going to say about Koeman was though his free kicks. He's the first player
his
I remember.
Goal record is unbelievable.
I was like a free kick specialist, and the way he revolutionised free kicks outside the penalty box, it was almost like a penalty to that guy.
Well, you'd argue that a player like Mihailovic. Sinisa Mihailovic, the former Yugoslavia and things. I mean, he came through probably on the back of Koeman and that kind of play.
Led to like Beckham and those kind of guys, and that's really kind of changed the way that people kind of look
almost
at.
Almost like those a, sort of like a, having a you know like your standoff in rugby, being a place kicker. Grant Fox. So we're not talking about rugby, but he was the first player who was really in a rugby team purely because of his kicking.
Yeah.
So you'd argue that you could have a player in just because of his free kicks.
Yeah, just that one chance at a time and just comes on. Yeah. And I thought he really kind of changed the way football was played and people looking for free kicks around about that area because it would lead to a better chance.
So you're going with Koeman or with?
Oh, I was going to go for Beckenbauer for his attacking. Like,
but you don't want to agree with me.
I don't want to agree with you, so I'm going to. I kind of agree, but do it differently.
Okay, all right. Well, Brian?
Yeah, well, I've got to go along, listen to all these panellists. I've got to go along with the man himself, Maradona. Just what he was, winning two World Cups, what he did for Napoli, and just the type of player that he was. He was so exciting to watch. Never saw him live. Watched him on television, see, but no doubt a lot of these have had. A lot of great players you've spoke about, and you could go on endlessly with these people.
I guess the thing with Maradona and what's similar with Cruyff is that they played that way at a time. George Best would be another when they had none of the protection that they have now. But what's interesting with Maradona in particular is probably more what he did at Napoli, where. If you take the south of Italy, I probably need someone Italian to really help me on this, but there's a huge north-south divide in Italy between the industrialised and rich north and what they see as the southern half. And I think he did a huge amount to give Napoli a lot of, pride and identity. And that's the kind of, he was a kind of character that would just break through.
But I mean, as you say, he took Napoli wasn't a European renowned team. And all of a sudden he takes them into Europe, wins the UEFA Cup, I think it was. Yeah, it was the UEFA Cup they won with him, the Italian League, the Italian Cups. And you take that against the Juves, the Romas, the more established teams, the Inter Milans, AC Milan. And you just got to admire the kid. This was one man doing all that. You look what he did at Argentina, one man doing all that. With all his, he wasn't the most dedicated athlete. But you think that if he
but
took
his natural gifts were immense.
If he had taken the attitude of a Beckham, of a Ronaldo, of a even Gary Neville that I talked about earlier, who gave up socialising alcohol at a young age because he wanted to focus on being, he would have sort of stood out beyond anyone. There wouldn't have been any sort of is he, isn't he? He would have just been sort of like.
But has he left a? A lasting legacy. I mean, outside of Argentina and Naples, has he left a really lasting legacy?
For me, I mean, one, he only had one foot, which was the left peg. And you got, I just look at 86 and I think what a phenomenal player that era was. And then you look at 98, a very average and mediocre Argentinian team. How he dragged it, even when he wasn't at his full peak, to a final. You just got to take, you got to just sort of applaud the guy and just think, you know, what a talent. And that is a lasting legacy. Unfortunately, he goes on to sort of
94
and the screaming into the camera. You know, what's he?
That was
on?
A good goal.
That was.
It was a good goal.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, I mean, we're talking a lot about individuals. I mean, what about teams? I mean, if I look at the 1998 French team that won the World Cup, that was very different in that it was the first, I think, French team that in a big way had integrated, had sort of included the new France, which was, you know, you guys like Desailly, Vieira, you had Zidane, you know,
Thuram.
All these Lilian Thuram. I mean, these were big influential players, you know, from either a sort of Central African or North African ethnicity.
Yeah,
originally you can see, for instance, Germany, you know, players like Mesut Ozil and stuff. Germany, you know, the stereotypes of how a country played a broke down. I mean, Germany are a very attractive team to watch. Now, they were always good, but they weren't really great to watch.
Yeah.
But now there's so many more influences and things. I mean, could you say that French team helped to change some sort of attitudes? And
I think for me, all the French team, actually, they became more of a total team throughout, right? And if you have, I mean, when you have 60 odd million as your population, you should be able to select a very athletic team.
But you know, for instance, someone like Marcel Desailly chose France over Ghana.
Yeah.
You know, it made that choice, and
but you've got to look at it from not only just from a you look at what Giggs did. I mean, he perhaps chose Wales over England from a personal point of view with family, but at the end of the day, is if you were sitting there, do I want to win a World Cup and play in World Cups, or do I just want to represent my hometown?
I mean, for me, I mean, you know, let's just say I'd been a footballer and, you know, could have been an international footballer. If someone had said to me, you could play for Scotland or England,
no.
I wouldn't have played for England because I thought I could have won more. That would just be alien to me.
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, you've got to remember, a lot of the Africans, they are leaving their countries.
Yeah.
That's they no longer go, you know, like very few of them probably go back there unless they, you know, they have to want to.
That team maybe changed some attitudes, but, you know, Brian, maybe the Spanish team, you know, the way they won the World Cup.
Yeah,
you
2010
know,
and all that.
Just basically keeping the ball.
They won the European.
Very low
they
score.
Won Europeans back to back.
Back to back, yeah. That was the first team ever to do that.
First team ever to do that and won the World Cup in between. There's a strong argument for that Spanish team.
But they came on, you know, as Steve mentioned earlier on, the tiki-taka. It was just basically, they had a very good Barcelona team which made up a lot of the bulk, and then they had a sort of made that up.
But what the manager there was, what they did very, very well is that the Spanish team has always tended to, if you've got a huge, strong Barcelona presence, and you've got a strong Real Madrid presence, which they also had, it's how you manage that faction. So I mean, he did very well and actually marrying those two.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things, is obviously Gary Neville wouldn't have been, because he wouldn't have been able to speak Spanish, but it does, being a manager is all about communication. You look at Ferguson was a good coach and a manager, but he had a vision, and he was a very, very good man manager, and he brought in very good coaches to deal with his what attitude and what skill level and what, shall we say, tactics he wanted to implement on the field.
Brian, we haven't mentioned 1970 in Brazil.
Sorry, Steve, yep. Oh,
I mean,
tremendous.
Do you argue that they could have been a team that really revolutionised how people thought football could be played? Just wherever we are on the pitch, we're just going to attack, we're going to dribble, doesn't matter.
No, that was it.
Carlos Alberto, I mean, he changed what the definition of a fullback was. I mean, all these modern wing backs now, he was the
captain.
He was the original, yeah.
You get the goal, yeah. Tremendous World Cup, tremendous team then in the 70s, Brazil.
But would you think it was a team that revolutionised football, or?
Well, in a way, no, really, you know.
Because they took a step back from it after 82, didn't they?
After 82, they did, yeah, when you come back. And just, when you saw Brazil going into a World Cup, see, he actually thought that Brazil's got to be there, the finals, the semi-final. And they just looked mediocre again, but they're coming back again now, going into the 21st century. and a big change from the 1970 outfit, definitely.
But they are a very good team, and I mean, they took on the Italians then, and the Italians were famous for the defensive football. And all of a sudden, this defensive.
This was the antidote.
Yeah. The defense, they had this defensive, well organised outfit against this flair, and for once, the flair actually.
Okay, alright, well, we just need to round this off. So, Tom, for you, one person or team that's done the most to revolutionise?
Cruyff, I think, as an individual, definitely, yeah. Stand by my first comments.
Andy?
I'll go Beckenbauer.
Beckenbauer, okay. I'll go with Beckenbauer as well. But and Drew?
Well, can I say Scotland? No, I'm going to go with Holland. The sort of 74, 72.
You could have Scotland in terms of finding new ways to lose. we've always been good at that. But you're going to go with
Holland.
So the team.
That period, yeah.
Okay, and Brian?
I'll just go along with my first choice.
Maradona. Okay, all right. Well, hopefully that's given everyone a bit of food for thought. That'll take us to the end of part two, and we'll be back with part three and some of our weekend previews. And then, yes, you've all missed it. It's the quiz. Okay, so here we are with part three of the Beyond the 90 podcast, powered by One Shot Football. We're here at District 10 Bistro and Bar. Now, we're going to preview some of the more interesting weekend fixtures. Certainly not all of them, and I've missed Chelsea off completely. Norwich, Newcastle. Tom, I mean, this is the quintessential relegation six-pointer. Benitez, he's probably had some time to work with the players. We're expecting some improvement. I mean, Norwich, they must have this marked as a must-win.
For me, Norwich home win. My mother is a Norwich fan, so I have to stay loyal. As much as Benitez has taken that on, I think Norwich, with that winner in the just before the international break, that's given some nice confidence to go into. I know Benitez would have had time to work with his players. Again, for both clubs, though, they've not lost too many players through that international break. Which is a key, but I think Norwich are going to have enough to sneak this one over the line. I think it's going to be actually a very good game to watch as well.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're going for a home win?
Home win for me.
Andy?
I'm going to go for Newcastle. I like.
You just like arguing, don't you?
Yeah. If I agree with you, I think Benitez. I do like Benitez. I think he's a good manager. I think he's a very good tactician, and I think with these must-win games are the sort of games that he thrives on, and I think he'll come up with some sort of.
Well, these will be the ones where he earns his coach. Are you going for an away win?
Yeah, I'm going for Newcastle.
Okay. Drew?
Well, still think they'll go down though, but yeah.
I agree with the big man. I think Benitez is a good manager. I also have a Delia Smith cookbook at home, so I'm going to go for a draw based on those two factors.
Okay, all right, Brian.
Steve, just to echo along with Tom. Hard game, tip Norwich at home, and I think they're just going to be
good
to do that.
I'd really like to see Norwich win. I'm a big Alex Neil fan. I think if you can just find a way to scrape through this season, I think there's a really, really good young manager.
If I remember, is he Scottish?
He's only
30.
That's
Norwegian.
How old is he?
34? Sorry, I'm going to take back that. I'm going for a Norwich win.
I don't think Benitez will dig them out this hole.
I think so too.
It is a man sized hole. Okay, all right. Well, Sunderland versus West Brom. It's Canada Dice Cover Pulis. I mean, this is not going to be one for the Pulis. I'm certainly not going to be turning this one. Andy, I mean, Sunderland, they need to win as well.
Yeah, to be honest, yeah, draw. Just. Because
0-0.
Yeah, no draw because just
cancelled at half time due to a lack of interest.
Yeah, it's a shame it can only be. Well,
did you have a negative scoreline?
Shame it can only be one loser.
Lose on corners.
Yeah.
No, I need to. I've got to go for a draw.
You're trying to sound more enthusiastic.
It's Sunderland WBA. So
no, to be honest, that's the biggest piece of the game.
Even thinking about that game sucks a life out.
So you're going for. Is it just going to be four draws and we just stop?
Yeah,
Tom, you got something to say?
Yeah, I mean, Sunderland, Allardyce, you know, he's never been relegated. They've got Jermaine Defoe. who is 32 years old, 32, 33 years old. He's in great shape. He's scoring.
Have you got a poster of Jermaine Defoe?
He's not on my man crush list. but no, I genuinely think Sunderland will beat West Brom. I think Defoe, you know, from watching the Tyne Wear derby last time out, I think Sunderland were unlucky for a draw. You could see Allardyce on the touchline screaming at his players because they weren't doing what was asked of them. Defoe will probably score a couple against West Brom, and that'll be a big lift.
Okay, so home win for you?
Yeah, home win. Yeah.
Okay, Brian.
Yes, I'll roll over again with Tom. Sunderland, set home win. Okay. Newcastle away, losing at Norwich. Set home win.
True.
And Alden.
I'm in a draw. I'm bored already listening to them.
Exactly. Okay. I think Sunderland will win this as well. I actually didn't put Bournemouth, Manchester City on the list. It's just how far Manchester City for. When you just look at their form, they've lost four of their last six. I mean, I guess, Drew, if they don't win this, I mean the title looks very, very dodgy for them anyway.
Now they're not going for the quadruple, I'm going for Bournemouth. I think they're useless. I think if they're lucky, they're going to finish sixth.
They really, really, it's just...
I think if Man City are lucky, they'll finish sixth.
Okay, all right, so you're going for a home win, Brian?
Yes.
Okay, another home win, Tom?
I think it'd be quite interesting because City actually got a few players back earlier. Their South American contingent are back a lot earlier than they normally are because some of them didn't play midweek.
No Joe Hart.
No Joe Hart. No Jack Butland. I know that's brought a tear to my eye.
Jack.
I think, again though, Eddie
Didn't
Howe.
Did he cry when he was coming? I hate football players. Why can't you stop crying?
No, but Jack Butland, he had a good chance at the Euros. I rate Butland above Hart. You know, I would have Butland in goal ahead of Hart for England on a side subject. But no, I think Bournemouth, Eddie Howe's had... What,
crying two? Should be banned on football pitches, I'm telling you.
Butland's had...
Who's going to win?
Slim Gazzle.
Who's going to win?
1-0.
Bournemouth. Andy?
I think Man City. I just think they're too strong.
Because everybody else said Bournemouth.
Yeah.
He's the fourth man, you know what I mean?
Okay, I'll take your money.
I agree with Andy. I think Man City will win that. Okay, now Liverpool Spurs. This is a huge game for Spurs, guys. All the pundits are tipping Spurs to trip up here. Drew?
No, I think this, although this is the one that's going to make or break the season, because if they lose it and Leicester win, they're going to be it's a Leicester sort of title without even.
But I mean, this is the thing, right? Spurs have, I mean, for instance, they lost their opening game of the season at Manchester United. Typically, when they go to the big clubs away, they just collapse.
I think it's maybe just
have
tactics.
They changed that?
I think it's tactics. I think they worry about the big teams. But then the Liverpool have been hot and cold all season.
Well, that's the problem. You don't know which Liverpool.
If Liverpool turn up with a team that humped Man City, Spurs will get gupped. If Liverpool turn up with any other team, Spurs will win, because Spurs have a very good team that collectively churn out results for them, and that's why I think Spurs will win.
Okay, so you're going with Spurs. It's a big call, Brian.
Go along, Steve. Just echo what Andrew said there. If Liverpool turn up with a team that bossed these teams earlier on, Manchester City, etc., it's got to be Liverpool. And Spurs have a bad record, I believe, at Anfield. Very bad record.
That's the problem. Okay, Tom?
I think it's a Liverpool win. Spurs Liverpool at Anfield, 46. Liverpool wins, 8 Spurs wins.
Yeah.
Spurs, England players, they play pretty much the majority of both of the friendlies. They'll have the tired of legs. I think, this will be a Liverpool home win for me. And yes, Drew, Jurgen Klopp is in my man.
I like Jurgen Klopp. I like Jurgen Klopp.
Andy?
Yes. Well, this is one of the games that I'm really excited about this weekend. I think this is the best. It's going to be the best game this weekend. I think the Spurs players who featured in the England side during the week looked very good. But yeah, I do think Liverpool could pull through here, and I do think that they may get the maybe.
At the end of the day, for the league to be exciting, you need a Spurs win. That's basically it.
Yeah.
Unless Leicester lose, of course.
It's amazing. Yeah. If Spurs lose and Leicester win, I mean,
it's all over.
We're
talking about Rangers Celtic next week.
Well, anyway, so who are you going with?
I'm going to go for Liverpool win.
Liverpool win. I've got no idea here.
Yeah, I'm the same boat.
I'm tempted to go with Spurs. I don't know why, but
Jurgen.
I mean, the players look good. All right.
Well, now I mean the team.
Who's
that
your team? Who are you going for? Don't start setting
Spurs.
The fence.
Well, oh, there we go.
Okay. Well, the team they're trying to chase down, Leicester, are hosting Southampton. A very successful international break for Leicester in terms of their players. The momentum, they've won their last three, four out of the last five. Drew?
I think Vardy and Mahrez are fantastic, and I'd love them to actually win the league, but to make it more exciting...
I still think they're going to come second.
To make it more exciting, I want a Spurs win and a Southampton win to put it within 2 points, and then we've got all to play for, and that'll be fantastic.
Okay, so you're going for...
I'm going for Southampton. Southampton have got not a bad record at the moment, they're playing
good
very
team.
Well. So I'm going to go with it.
Tom?
I'm going for a draw. I think Super Fraser Forster in goal.
So you move on to him now.
Oh, is this you tying him with the Celtic clip?
No, he can't say Super Jack Butler now. Due to only having one leg.
No, I think Southampton are very good. I mean, they have, since Fraser Forster came back, you know, they kept like 5-6 clean sheets in a row.
I don't think he needs to
use his full take. They're playing very well at Southampton as a unit. I think Leicester, they'll have enough for a draw. They'll play they have all the way. They'll just draw Southampton on. They'll draw Southampton on and then try and catch them on the breaks.
All right, Andy?
1-1.
I'm going to go for Southampton. I would like Leicester to win, but I just think Southampton...
We go for an unusual amount of away. I always say this, the amount of away wins we predict on this podcast is...
Do we get them right, though? That's the main thing.
Okay, no, I just think I do like Southampton. I think they've been quite unlucky this season. I think they've got some really good players, a good manager, and I think they should be further up the table than what they are.
That's because the manager's not good. A bit like the next game we're coming to.
I'm going to take a guess.
You're going with Southampton. Brian?
Leicester. Without a doubt, Steve, 3 or 4 months ago, you would never have been putting this into a category, Leicester and Southampton here. Where they are in the league, all the clubs below them, they're all cutting each other's throat. Leicester are just ploughing away. Tremendous team. Tremendous squad of players.
So home win for you, yeah?
Definitely.
You need to stop
playing. I'm with you, Brian. Come on, Leicester. Come on, Leicester. Now, Manchester United, Everton. The best manager in the league versus the worst. Guys, I mean, is the top four door still open for Man United? Everton now are going to be focusing on the cup, right? They can't get relegated, unfortunately. And there's no European football to go for.
I'm going to go for a Man U win. I'd like to see Mourinho in at Man U. Really, just to see, because he is the most successful manager managed over 100 games in the Premier League, and I think Man U actually needs something.
I would also point out that when we're talking about Jose Mourinho, the Tom's man crushes are junior.
Yes.
So I'll talk to you about a real man crush, man.
I want Man U to win. I think they'll win. I don't think Everton got humped 3-0 with them at Goodison sort of midway through the season.
By the way, just for all our listeners not from Glasgow, hump means beaten.
Yes.
Badly.
And I reckon Man U will beat them.
Gumped also means the same thing.
2-0, 3-0. Okay. I prefer humped.
As more
of a sexual connotation.
Well, for our young listeners. So, Manchester United for you. Brian?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah, go along with that. Man U, all the way. Yeah.
Well, if you look at the competence of the two managers, it should be about 10-0 Man United. Andy?
That's Martinez.
I'm going to agree and go for Man U. I don't think Everton are a good side.
Are you on well?
I think they're doing what, Everton? I think Martinez's last season was just going off the work that Moyes did. I don't rate the guys as a manager. I don't think they've got a good team.
You're on the right side of the table.
What's that?
I used to just go with Martinez.
Andy's coming back to this podcast again.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for Man U. I think I'm going to win actually pretty comfortably, but I think...
3 for Manchester United. Tom?
I think it'll be a draw. Well, maybe at the most, I think Everton might nick it 1-0. I think they've got Lukaku. Lukaku, I think it will dominate the Manchester United back four.
There was some good news for United because Schweinsteiger's out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I wish Fellini was.
Yeah. Young Ross Barkley as well. I mean, you know, he's a great player. I mean, we know Everton can't defend, and we know that Martinez does definitely have his weaknesses, but I think United after the international break.
We would
break,
list them, but it would take too long.
I think the international break was probably a bad thing for Manchester
can
United.
Can I just interject?
Okay, so you're going to draw? Okay, I'm going to take United to win. Now, we don't really look at La Liga, but we shall, because it's El Clasico and the world will be watching. Tom, I mean, MSN as they're known, are they just going to take Real
I like that.
Apart?
I think so, yeah. I think Barcelona are going to be far too strong. For Madrid, there's been a few articles in the media this week about how Zidane is going to pick the first Real Madrid 11 that have not really played together at all this season, with some of the players that he's planning to pick to try and attack and win the game.
Is Bale fit?
Bale is fit, yes, because he didn't play the internationals. He stayed in Spain.
Recuperating.
I still think though Barcelona will probably nick this 2-0 or 3-0. I think Real Madrid are going to try and go on the offensive too much and just get picked off.
Okay, Andy.
I agree. I'm going for Barcelona in this one. What do you think?
It's
a superior team. I think Real Madrid very kind of can be a one man team at times. I just think that the skill of Messi, and I'm a big fan of Suarez. I think he's I rate him as the best striker in the world at the moment.
You hope he'll go to Parkhead when he's 40.
I'd take that. Yeah,
okay,
take
all right. That. So Barcelona for you?
Yeah, Barcelona. Yeah.
Okay, Brian.
Yeah.
See, if you look at it in the context, Steve. If any of the European tie, then in the quarterfinal, would be different, be difficult, difficult to actually describe here. But it's got to be Barca.
Okay. All right. So it's.
I'm going for Real Madrid. Purely because I think they need a win. They're chasing a win, and when you look at the history of the games at the Nou Camp, it's basically two games each over the last few seasons, all 2-1 wins, apart from Real Madrid beating them 3-1. So there's
Real's biggest problem is that they can't keep 11 players on the pitch generally in this fixture. Oh,
I think if Bale's there, and I think if Ronaldo will be happy with those two in the team, I reckon they'll do it.
Or should keep Benzema off the mobile camera? Right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so you're going for an away win.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Barca. I just think you have to go with form. Okay, so it's our quiz. I'm trying to remember who's the current holder of the trophy. You, it's you, is
me.
It?
Me!
Yeah. Well, that means you can't win today.
Sure. When I was here the last time, I won it.
I was just trying to see if anyone had been listening.
I've got
now
it
then.
Recording.
Okay, no, first question. How many players have played for both Barcelona and Real Madrid?
Just a number.
Three.
Six. Do you want me to name them? We've only got an hour time.
Yeah, I'll go four.
You go four.
I'll go five.
He's looking at the answers.
I know, I'm not looking at the
answers. No, you weren't.
Is it five? Is it five?
Right, who said six?
Yes.
Drew wins.
Yes. 30,
you
can name them if you want.
33. Including such luminaries as Ronaldo.
I was thinking since the 1950s.
No, Ronaldo, Figo, Bernd Schuster, Robert Prozinecki, Georgie Hagi, Samuel Eto'o.
Laudrup.
That's six for a start. Michael Laudrup, yeah. I mean, there's... It's very Luis Enrique. There's
Luis Enrique. Yeah,
33. So who is the all-time top goal scorer in El Clasico?
Figo.
No, the Mexican. Figo? The Mexican kid Sanchez.
You're going Figo. Hugo Sanchez.
Hugo Sanchez.
Oh, Laudrup.
And Laudrup. Okay.
At the present.
Well, no. Who scored the most goals in this fixture?
I'll go for Di Stefano.
Di Stefano. He's actually second with 18. I mean, this was an open goal for all of you. Lionel Messi with 20.
Really?
Oh!
Second book. That was my second.
Di Stefano was 18, so Brian gets the points. And both Cristiano Ronaldo and Raul have 15. Not including friendlies, there have been 230 Clasicos. Who's ahead?
It's a draw. They're all on square.
I'll go Real.
So you're going Real, but okay, can you give me how many have they won out of the 230?
So I'm right then.
Ha ha ha!
No. You'll take a point.
No, because someone else is going to get Real Madrid and there'll be able to be a tiebreaker.
Okay, okay.
So you're going Real Madrid and I want to know how many.
Okay, so how many do you think?
Well, actually, let's go for it. You're going Real?
230. Okay, I'll go Real and I'll go 100. They've won.
No, well, hang on. That's it. Let's find out who wants everything. You're going Real? You're going Real?
I see Real.
You're going?
I'm going Barca.
You're going Barca. Okay, you're out because it is Real. So now it's who's close. How many have they won out of the 230 games?
Out of the 230 games, I'm going to go with...
I'll do a calculator. 230.
You have to do a calculator.
82.
I'm counting
you up. Okay, he's got 82. How many are you going for?
Can I take my shoes and socks off?
You don't count after 10, Andy.
I'll say
64.
92. Yay! 2 months again.
Now, only one Scottish player has ever played for Barcelona. Can you name
Stevie
it?
Archibald. Stevie Archibald. Let's move on.
1984 to 1988. Okay. Can you name the other? The four. Well, there's a total of four. Was it one, two? Yeah. Four Scottish players have played in La Liga, including Archibald. Can you name the other three?
Strachan?
No, my mate. Oh. Jamie.
And the Magic Torch?
No, I played for Real. He went on holiday and he got lifted by Real Mallorca.
There's a young Scottish kid. Are you on about the young Scottish kid?
No, not him. He hasn't made a Jack Harper. He's 20 years old. Yeah. Do you know he's actually born in Mallorca?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the kid that's
no.
Sport.
There are three other Scottish players who have made La Liga first team appearances. I'll give you one, which is Jack Watson. He played for Real Madrid in 1948-49.
With a big team, he must have been very good.
Now, I'll give you. You should be on. The other two are both ex-Rangers players.
What, playing the league?
One is still playing.
Jamie Stevenson.
One's still playing.
Well, he's lying to me then.
Oh, I know. Alan Hutton.
Alan Hutton, yep. Played for Mallorca, 2012-2013, yeah. And there's one more in the late 80s. Played for Rangers, also played for Derby, I think.
McCoist?
Nope. It's a Mick...
Oh, Ted McMahon.
Ted McMahon, yeah.
Yeah, Drubin's at point.
Okay.
Not, he had his leg cut
okay,
off.
When is the last... So, we're looking at a title race where, you know, Spurs and Leicester are looking pretty good. When's the last time that one of Manchester City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United didn't win
Blackburn.
The league? Blackburn in... 1995, but again, Drew's powering ahead, guys. How many times have not the old European Cup, but how many times have Spurs played in the Champions League?
Four. Twice.
No, once.
Andy?
I'll say zero.
Once. Yep. And they also played in the European, the old European Cup.
Cup.
Once. How many seasons in their entire history, how many seasons have Leicester played in Europe?
Once.
Once?
None.
Say twice.
Twice.
No, good. O'Neill not taking that?
Either you and zero. Right. Leicester O'Neill. Cup.
Okay, Andy gets a point. It's three times. They play in the old European Cup Winners' Cup in 61-62, and they play in the UEFA Cup in 97-98,
yeah.
And 2000-2001.
That was O'Neill.
Now, we mentioned Nicholas Bentner earlier. In just 9 years at Arsenal, how many league appearances did he make?
38.
That's a confident 38. That's a confident.
So just go with 38.
Well, I'll go with 38.
59. 39. 40.
And he gets the point. 108.
Yay!
24 goals. He also went on loan to Birmingham, Sunderland and Juventus. That's how many Danish caps does he have?
I would say 38.
55.
70.
66.
And he gets a point, 72.
Yay!
He's got 20.
It's not working out the answers. This is what he's doing.
Can I even see?
I'm not.
29 goals. Okay, now, how many England caps does John Terry have?
78.
Okay, 78.
Oof, that's another confident one.
That's right.
I'll go 80.
80.
81.
77. It's
78. It is
78,
yeah.
Yeah, but,
okay, how many goals has he scored?
12.
6.
9.
I don't
single figures.
I'll
say 7.
Six again, so Tom gets that. I don't understand this.
Mag Rush.
Phil Jagielka. How many England caps has he got?
He's got a few, I think.
30 odd. 32.
34.
34.
30.
34 gets it. 39 he's got.
Really?
Ooh. Theo Walcott has spent 10 years at Arsenal. Now, bearing in mind that most of these won't be stars, this is, how many league appearances has he made in 10 years?
How many league appearances? I would say 270.
270?
I say 170.
125.
98.
98. That's 10 years. Less than 10 a season.
Well done.
10 years.
Your maths is shocking.
Okay. 230. Andy gets the points.
What, I get the points?
No, you get the points.
How did he get the points?
Did you say?
I said 200. He was only 170. Where did you do a maths? 270.
I misheard you. So yes, you get the points. The last time the Euros were held in France, who won?
France.
They did. Can you name the year?
98. No, 96.
No. 96. 86 was a World Cup.
96. 74.
96. No, 84. That was England.
84.
84, oh, yes. Yeah. And who was the top goal scorer?
Platini.
In five games, how many goals did he score?
Four.
Seven.
Six.
Five.
Nine. Pretty good performance. I think that's called winning a tournament on your own. I've got no choice. I have to declare today's quiz winner as Drew.
Yay! Once again. Takes the titles.
So that has been the Beyond the 90 podcast. Hope you enjoyed listening. I'm your host, Steve McBain. A big thank you to my guest, Mr. Andy Dyer.
Thanks.
For you watching on TV, that was a wave.
Quiz winner, Mr. Yeah. Drew O'Donnell.
Yes!
And the reason for Mr. Drew O'Donnell winning the quiz, Mr. Brian O'Donnell.
Thank you.
And Mr. Tom Moran.
Thank you very much. Thank
okay,
you.
We'll be back next week with another pod. Thanks for listening.
Cheers, guys.